This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
More bombshells in the Karen Reed murder case. And following it, it's been entertaining, to say the least. I was actually out on a cruise last week, and I was sitting there on my phone, just kind of glued to the insanity that was going on. The judge has ruled that prosecutors can use direct messages between Reed and controversial blogger Aidan Kearney at trial, messages that allegedly include autopsy photos, witness addresses, and even grand jury material. It's part of what prosecutors say was a covert media campaign to pressure witnesses and control the public narrative. But is leaking case info to a blogger criminal or just bad judgment? And when does free speech cross the line into obstruction of justice? Joining us is former prosecutor and criminal defense attorney Eric Fattis. Eric, how big of a problem is this going to be, legally speaking, when a defendant is allegedly caught? I mean, she did flat out admit to talking with him every day on the documentary, feeding sensitive information, allegedly, to Kearney, who's under criminal indictment for witness intimidation already.
Yeah, you know, a lot of moving parts here, a lot of ongoing developments, even this close to trial, which is interesting. In looking at it, there's, in and of itself, there's nothing necessarily wrong with providing case information to another person. But sometimes where it crosses the line is when we're talking about witness intimidation, possible jury tampering, possible obstruction of justice. And we're looking at the information that was transmitted. One is like witnesses' addresses, allegedly.
Yeah.
That starts to raise some eyebrows in terms of these legal issues.
Well, and what is being allowed in, as of right now, is the communications between Reed and the blogger. Not the attorney and the blogger, at least as of yet. I wonder if that will change, but I'm going to ask you about that in a moment. But the fact that we have this list of stuff where we get to witness addresses and all of this, and we do clearly see, because we have seen the messages between the attorneys and him already, even though that may not be admitted into court, we can clearly see what was going on here. At the very least, a lot of, I don't know, I would read it as encouragement when it's like, and I'm just paraphrasing here, like, that was great. I believe there were some more explicits in there when talking about the way that this blogger was attacking people on his show and doxing information of people, giving out all that sort of stuff. And then you have the defense and you, I don't know what exactly was going on with Karen and her. We will certainly find out. But you have the camp, at the very least, I think it's safe to say, encouraging this by being really excited about it. Is that a safe assumption to make? Is that legally accurate to say excited about it? Maybe not necessarily saying go to the house and do this. Who knows what we're going to find, but they certainly were cheering him on.
It appears to be approval of what's going on,
yeah,
and also enabling of what's going on. And that second part is potentially problematic because they're giving information to this turtle boy who is then, in some people's eyes, engaging in harassment and intimidation of witnesses. It's one thing to profess one's innocence, but to enlist kind of a team to, make life hard for witnesses so they don't testify against you, that starts verging on witness intimidation, which is an extremely serious crime. And I understand that Turtle Boy has at least an alleged history of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly charges there. We'll see where all that pans out to. So it's certainly been looked at. And I mean, if you just watch his videos, you can go, that certainly looks like witness intimidation. Unless you're blind and deaf and you can't understand or comprehend what's going on in front of you, I guess that's my conjecture. I don't know how it would be looked at as anything else. I mean, he's even flat out said this, in more or less words, I'm paraphrasing here, that he doesn't care that, you know, it's intimidating witnesses. So he clearly is aware that his practices are intimidating potential witnesses in this case. And then if you actually have the defendant on the other side going on national television and documentaries saying that I talk to him every day for several hours, 5 to 6 days a week, and then later in that documentary also saying, well, I know he goes to the doors of people and knocks and does this or that, but they shouldn't be looked at as witnesses. They should be looked at as people who are being accused of the crime here. It's not up to Karen to do that. That's not for her to decide and say, well, I don't think I should be the one on trial here. I think it should be you. That's not reality. That's not the world we're working in at this moment in time. And you know, maybe you shouldn't be on trial, Karen, but that's not for you to decide. And it's not for you to, from what it appears, kind of be on board with this sort of activity. It seems to go quite extreme. What could we have for legal ramifications here if we're just talking about Karen and him? Obviously, this information can go into the trial, but beyond the trial, beyond the bad optics of this for a jury and the rest of the world, what could we actually see happen here?
You know, in parts of the recent Karen Reed documentary, my read on it was that Karen Reed thinks that she can't be held responsible for witness intimidation or something like that, mm-hmm, because Turtle Boy was doing all of this stuff. But that's not really what the law says. The law has something called accomplice liability. And what that means is that if Karen Reed knew that Turtle Boy wanted to intimidate witnesses to prevent them from testifying, and she provided material aid in support thereof, and also shared that belief that, hey, I also don't want these people testifying against me, that comes very close or possibly crosses the line into Karen Reed being charged with witness intimidation. There are some concerns about jury tampering, but I think Karen Reed probably is able to slither away from that because there is no jury that's actually been sat yet. And usually that's required. And just sort of, you know, tainting a future jury pool is often not adequate grounds for jury tampering. And so there are a number of legal issues that she's already contending with, and this adds several more.
So how, if at all, could this affect the trial where they're beginning jury selection here? The trial's going to be starting. Could this have any issue with that in terms of delaying the trial or not, or maybe it's not getting there right now and having a stay on this? And or is this going to be an issue that's going to be addressed, or charges could possibly still come while the trial is going on, after the trial has finished? Is this like, you know, part three now to the saga that we're going to have to endure?
If there were new charges against Karen Reed, that could definitely result in a continuance of the current trial. But absent that, I get the impression Judge Cannone is going to want this to move forward. One thing it does for Karen Reed is The prosecution might say, hey, look, if a person's innocent, have the witnesses come in. And those witnesses aren't going to incriminate her because she did nothing wrong. She should be able to challenge them in cross-examination, have her day in court, and all is well and good. But when you start to engage in these alleged underhanded tactics of trying to intimidate witnesses and prevent them from testifying, it really adds a shady glare to what the defense is doing. And it's already a death case. Those optics can be problematic.
I mean, I'm sure anyone could, if you really dug, find information on these potential witnesses. It's not a big town. I'm sure you could find addresses and phone numbers and all that sort of stuff. But if the allegations are true that she was providing some of this stuff to him, I mean, that's, I get, you know, you can leak things out, you know, but that, I mean, personal information of people, where, I mean, how do you argue that there's any viable reason for this in his reporting, especially when he goes out there and then starts putting all this public information or all this private information out there to the public, you know, basically in a attitude way of a vendetta of harass those people, of call those people out because he believes and she obviously believes that they are in the right and they are in the wrong, even though they're the ones on trial.
Yeah, it's an important point you touch on, Tony, because it's one thing for Karen Reed and her team to come out and say, hey, look, these witnesses are lying. They shouldn't be believed. This is a horrible thing that's happening to Karen Reed. Please feel sorry for her. That sort of thing. That's one thing. But when you are actually giving addresses for these witnesses, what's the purpose of that? Mm-hmm. What are you trying to accomplish? One thing you're doing is showing their location. Well, what could showing their location lead to? It could lead to people going to their house and harassing them and intimidating them, that kind of thing. There is just no innocent purpose that I can see for leaking the addresses themselves. And so the inference that many people are drawing is that this was sort of more of a concerted, underhanded effort to make these witnesses feel bad and feel scared. And that kind of thing is out of bounds and not something the jury is going to like.
I mean, I guess all you'd really have to do, and correct me if I'm wrong, is just have one of those people say, yeah, I felt really intimidated. Many have already. Many have said, yeah, it's been hell. They've been harassed, pressured. And again, this is whether you think they're right or wrong, whether you think Karen is innocent or guilty, there's been plenty of people in here that go beyond just the officers in this case. There's so many people who have nothing to do with this. They're family members, their neighbors, their relatives, their dogs. there's so many things to this where people have been intimidated. I mean, I think that's without a doubt true to the point and if you're called then to be a witness, I mean, could you back out of that? Could you say, look, I feel threatened. I don't feel safe to come out here as a witness in this trial. Could you just take that for them? Then that would initiate charges against her of, look, you were part of this. Now they don't want to testify. They may have to. But the fact that that person is relaying, I was intimidated by this harassment, does that make witness intimidation a fact?
That is part of it, but it's not the whole thing. So that would not, in and of itself, necessarily result in new charges. What they're going to have to look at is whether Karen Reed essentially had this conscious objective, whether she had this knowledge that Turtle Boy was doing this and that she was feeding into it, providing material aid for that, and in fact that she wanted it to happen. Now, that bar is a little bit more difficult to reach. Mm-hmm. We look in the documentary, and Karen Reed seems a bit gleeful at times about some of the negativity going on the prosecution side, but does that rise to the level of, oh, I wanted these people to feel horrible and not testify against me? That's a little bit of a higher bar that would be difficult to prove.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to get into her mind and go, you know, and I do wonder to a certain extent, did she realize that this was going to be the consequence to encouraging this type of behavior? I don't know. I mean, I'm just my conjecture on obviously some of the statements that she's made publicly, not the brightest in many cases of what you should and shouldn't do for your own best interest. But that's my conjecture. So I wouldn't be surprised somewhat if initially she didn't think that there were going to be consequences for this. But I would think as you go down this road a couple years, you start to see, and everybody's calling out saying, hey, this is not okay. You can't be doing this. And then to continue on with it, would the pattern of behavior really show what it is? Like once, look, there's no sensible reason why you wouldn't know this would be intimidation, but you kept on doing it. Is that the bar that needs to be crossed to kind of show that there is some consciousness of guilt in this sort of a play?
Tony, the pattern of conduct is a very important consideration and one way to prove what's going on inside someone's head. Like you said, when this was initially happening, maybe Karen Reed wasn't on board with it, witness intimidation, that kind of thing. But as she's seeing it play out repeatedly over the course of weeks and months with multiple different witnesses coming forward saying they felt intimidated, and then she continues in her course of action, which is providing this information, including allegedly witness addresses and locations, there it starts to show to a reasonable person, common sense would dictate, hey, she knew what was happening and she kept doing it anyway. Doesn't that mean that she at least has knowledge of what the likely outcome is, which is witness intimidation? And if she has such knowledge, that can get you over the hump in terms of filing charges.
Would this be something that would play out after the trial?
I would think that the prosecutor strategically would want to do it before, because it adds to just this sort of appearance of guilt. Someone who is doing some sort of, in some people's eyes, dastardly maneuvers to try and avoid being held responsible criminally. And so it would seem like the prosecution would want to get that in front of the jury for this trial, as opposed to trying to do something after the fact.
Just in front of the jury, though, but I'm talking about new charges, about, you know, new case, basically, where, and it's not the murder, it's like in witness intimidation, whether she's found innocent or guilty or not on the murder charges, not even talking about that anymore. It's would these new charges, would this stop the murder case? Would this, let's say she gets charged this week, just in theory, on this, and they're picking a jury right now. Could that nullify the whole thing? Almost like Donna Adelson, they were picking the jury, and then suddenly, oh, this other hiccup comes out, and now everything's stopped. Could that play out this week because of this sort of alleged behavior?
Any such new charges would be a massive development and would likely result in a continuance of this new trial, because both sides would want to regroup, evaluate what is being alleged, what the exposure is for the defendant, and what it could look like for her future, how it might impact trial strategy, how it might impact witnesses who need to be called. So yes, it could blow the entire thing up, and we could be seeing this for years longer instead of just months longer.
My God. Oh, I got so many more questions on this. Let me ask you this. Why did the judge exclude the communications between the blogger and his lawyers? There was some pretty dark stuff on there that really, you know, showed a lot of, you know, rah, rah, that was great. You know, when we get to court, don't mind if we, you know, don't be offended if we don't shake your hand, because we want to show that we're separated. I mean, those are pretty damning statements that were in some of those documents. Why is that not getting into trial, or could it still get in there?
I think it could still. I think there are two significant legal considerations with respect to that. One is that there's something called a work product doctrine. What that basically says is that an attorney, while preparing for trial, can have communications that aren't necessarily with a witness, that aren't necessarily discoverable, that shouldn't go to the jury. It's kind of like saying, hey, lawyer, you get to sort of do your thing in terms of working your case up, getting it ready for trial. And that is private to a degree. There are also hearsay considerations, because the lawyer is not a party, and getting the lawyer's statements into court without calling the lawyer as a witness under hearsay rules is problematic. That being said, and then on top of that, the lawyer's statements aren't always attributable to the defendant. What the judge might be thinking is that it's the defendant on trial, the defendant's state of mind, the defendant's statements. The lawyer's statements are not necessarily attributable to Karen Reed.
That makes sense. Okay, that's explained a little bit better on that. So that I get that. Why did her counsel, why did her attorneys allow her to dig this hole, I guess is the question. Why go on to this documentary, allow her to say these things out loud? Or were they just, do you think they were completely blindsided too? And she just went off the rails. I would think you'd prep her a little bit for what you can and can't say, or have some sort of clause with this documentary where the attorneys can have some sort of final say on what you're allowed to publish and what you're not. What the hell happened here?
Yeah, some clause, or what about just sitting next to her?
Yeah, there's a scene where they are. There is a scene where they are, where I think it's Yannetti that's back in the background, and it's a really powerful one, too. And she's sitting there. I forget what scene it was, but she's saying some pretty horrible things about this connection. And he's just kind of back there working on stuff. I'm like, your client, well, they're melting in front of you.
Yeah. And let me say that I really do have a lot of respect for the defense team as attorneys. I think generally speaking, Yannetti and Jackson are really exceptional attorneys, but every attorney makes missteps. I think agreeing to this documentary in and of itself is a perilous prospect, because even if you're sitting next to your client and you might not want her to answer, well, the cameras are on. And if you intervene, does that show some kind of inference of guilt to the viewer that you didn't want your client to answer that? So you're in a difficult dilemma there. The other option is letting your client just go and say whatever. That is also problematic. Karen Reed, at times in the documentary, came off as callous and detached. And I think that it didn't do her any favors. Her legal team maybe should have considered a different call on that.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly, the documentary does not make her a murderer, but oh my God. I mean, if you're just to be a human being and judging another's personality, going, is this a good person? Is this someone that like has empathy for others? And here's what I want to throw this at you too. Because I hear it a lot in comments and such of, well, look, she's being charged with murder of someone that she didn't kill. So if they're assuming she didn't kill him, and it was, you know, an accident, which I think it was an accident. If it even happened, I think they're gonna have a hard time even proving that there was the vehicle strike. But again, if you're on the idea that she did not have anything to do with it, and they were railroading her, and that they were, you know, just going to get her on this no matter what, which I get, that would be horrible if you felt that way. And judging by the history of these departments and the issues that they have, it's not that crazy of an idea. But to the extent as to which you can go with this, it's kind of shocking that this all has played out the way that it has, and that it's been allowed to go that way.
Yeah. And when you look at sort of Karen Reed's demeanor, some of her statements in this documentary, look, as an attorney, one thing you want to do is you want to be protecting your client. And part of that is protecting the narrative, especially in a publicized case. You want to have some control over that. When you cede control to a non-lawyer client who's going through probably the most distressing time of her life. She lost her partner, and then she's being accused of killing him when she said she didn't do it. That could result in her saying some things that are off color, that are not helpful, misstating something. And so it's really a scary endeavor to allow a client free rein to just do whatever they want under those circumstances. And I think that you're bound to encounter some pitfalls and some problems for the trial coming up.
Yeah, because I mean, I just see so much of, well, if you were in that situation, wouldn't you? No, I wouldn't do that, because I don't want to be charged with a crime over here. Like it's just because you think you were wronged, and maybe she was. That's what the trial is for. That's what the whole damn thing is about, to figure out innocence or guilt. If she was overcharged, then, you know, hopefully then they'll find her not guilty on those areas. But then to dig this hole, and then justify digging the hole with all of this nonsense and all of this harassment that has gone on to innocent people. Again, it's Lord of the Flies at a certain point, where we're going to determine who's guilty and who's not, the public, that being, and we're just going to handle this, you know, with pitchforks and flames is what it kind of seems like. Karen seems to believe is a form of justice, or appropriate form of justice, by even her own words in that documentary, just so to speak.
Totally. And on the defense side, you can overplay your hand. You can lay it on a little too thick. You know, defense wants the narrative of, oh, poor, now single Karen Reed is being railroaded and have sympathy for her. She doesn't deserve this. This is totally unfair to her. But then when you start laying on too thick and you start to demonize the other side and engage in allegedly shady tactics to do so, including possible witness intimidation, that kind of thing, then you're not the good guy anymore. You start to look like the bad guy. And when we're talking about a death case at a criminal trial, the defendant doesn't want to look like the bad guy.
No, even if they think they're doing the right thing, if they think that they're being accused wrongly, okay, I get you're angry, but you can't go commit other crimes to justify you're being accused of something over here. You got to handle that correctly. It's a total mess. And at the end of the day, it seems like a lot of the bad acts that have played out after the fact of John O'Keefe's death are becoming the bigger story here in this. Again, I mean, I didn't think we could dig any deeper where this is going to get more crazy, but my God, what do you think we're going to see come out in the trial that we haven't seen come out yet?
You know, I think that the prosecution is having their evidence team go through this documentary with a fine-tooth comb, clipping all of the statements from Karen Reed the prosecution thinks are incriminating. And I think there's going to be a litany of those statements that could be used. Because what happens is these statements are now what are called admissions by a party opponent. Karen Reed is a party. And so the prosecution can use any statement she's made that's relevant and complies with the other rules against her. And she has just given them a number of gifts in that documentary.
It's crazy. This was, I felt the first trial was so much about character than it was the actual crime. And I think she was able to lean on that a bit. She had somewhat of a likability factor. She had spoken a bit too much and enough people had been turned away. But she's right down there in the dumps, just as close to Proctor, it feels, in terms of what you're saying out loud. Again, not necessarily criminal things you're saying out loud, but if you're being judged on character here as well, which you are in a trial, whether you like it or not, any sort of likability factor seems to no longer exist. And I'm thinking that will probably play a role in the jury's mind this round. Maybe not to convict her of murder, but I don't know about the other ones. I mean, look at Murdaugh. I mean, I think the scales in that one were tipped because of character, because of what we saw with the financial things. The lack of empathy that we've seemed to have seen here in her, in that doc, for people who lost their son, people who are not out there even remotely involved in anything that would be considered shady or questionable, and to be so dark to those people and then deny it, and then deny that they're not encouraging people to harass this family and boo them as they walk in when it's right there on tape. That's the contradictions are mind-blowing here.
Yeah, and I think you're right that if the first trial was about Karen Reed's good character, the second trial could be about Karen Reed's bad character. Yeah. And like you said, there's certainly a prohibition on the jury can't convict someone because they don't like them or they think they're a bad person. But on the other hand, those are human beings in there. Yeah. They're going to perceive information about who this individual is. And that information is not going to be somehow compartmentalized outside of their brain when they're determining guilt or innocence.
No, it is not at all. What I think originally many of us thought was just going to be a repeat. This is a whole new trial. This is completely, this is going to be a whole new show.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.